Why do you live in L.A.? And what do you see in this city?
Well, I was kind of, I was brought here at the age of three, and the city kind of crawls into you and makes you a part of it, you know. And it's not so much that I see in the city, it's just you get familiar with a thing and it becomes something that you can understand. Probably if I'd hung around East Kansas City, I would like it too, you see. So it's just familiarity. I can know where to move around. I don't get lost too often here, often enough, but it's just knowing a thing. I don't brag on it or anything. That's about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess some places must have more to offer. New York has better racetracks.
I wish you wouldn't mention New York. I only lasted 3 months there. And the people were pretty strange. You know, I go into a liquor store to get a couple six-packs, and they almost attacked me, even though I'm giving them money. The clerks were hostile.
Mm.
I don't mind indifference, you know, when you're buying something, but to be glared at, you know, when you're making a purchase and you're giving a guy a profit, it was very strange to me. And well, you're from New York, but I just found this hostility there, being from L.A., and, you know, it's not quite like that, so it was strange to me. And so I just stayed there 3 months.
Yeah,
so I gave up my job hanging posters in the New York subway, and I took off for Philly. That's all.
Well, how has recognition changed your life? That sort of fame. I mean, you were always writing about the real working class themes and life, and now you're famous, a celebrity, or minor celebrity, as you say.
Yeah, minor, except in Europe, it's major. A lot of people worry about this. What's he going to write about now? He's not working in the post office, he's not working in a factory. He doesn't seem to get in the drunk tank quite as often. And what's the guy going to write about? Well, that's up to me, you know. And was a totally Italian interviewer who was here a couple nights ago. That if I can't hack it in any area, I'm not a writer at all. I mean, if I were living in Beverly Hills with butlers and chauffeurs, I should still be able to write.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what it's about, if the writing's good, it's going to precisely stand out as good writing, no matter what the subject matter is. So I have no qualms about coming through. I have minor self-doubts, but no major qualms.
But you work...
Yeah, go ahead. But people always expect me to keep writing about prostitutes and getting drunk and puking on the rug. I'm no longer doing this, so I just can't write about it. So I have to move to another area. But I think I'm still getting the line down tough and good.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, what writer doesn't think he isn't or she isn't still producing the good thing?
But your work is autobiographical, especially your novels. I mean, the Henry Chinaski character is more or less you. I mean, I would assume that from the same point of view and the consistency through it, right?
Mm-hmm. Very little fabrication. Now and then there's a bit of fictionalizing just to pretty up a paint job a bit, but I don't do that too often. I stick pretty much... It's the parts I leave out are what make it gel. The reality I leave out is what makes the realities hooked together.
Do you have trouble with people expecting you to live up to your the expectations of the persona of Henry Chinaski?
That's their problem. I suppose at poetry readings, I do give them a bit of the old madman bit, you know. I'm still quite crazy, but it's only more sublime. But I give them a good show at the readings, you know, plus some poetry. So only at readings do I weaken a bit and give them the persona. In my private life, I am quite normal until I go mad. I go mad now and then. Right, darling?
Yes, dear.
So, it's still there, only it's in a different form.
Did you study poetry at all, the formal traditions?
Hell no. I detest... In fact, I detest most poetry. Ancient, modern. I can't read it. I can't stomach it. And I just stay away from all academic training. I try to stay away from poets and short story writers and novelists. I'd rather get drunk with a plumber or even a cop. You could learn more talking to them. Because they're going to talk about things that happened to them during the day, not their craft, or they're going to get published here. You know, shop time is very deadly.
But yet, you're sort of a literary figure. You go to readings, or you have to give readings, and...
I don't have to give readings, but I don't give many readings. And as time goes on, I get less and less readings. And I don't like to give readings. I used to do it for the rent. Now I do it for a new set of steel radial belted tires, you see. Well, what can you get for $1,000? So, it's weakness. You know, I take the 1,000, I read, it's over in an hour. But I don't like doing it. I don't write poems to stand up in front of people and read them.
Mm-hmm. Are you always writing in your mind?
Never. I never walk around thinking, I'm a poet. I have to remember this. Oh, this is a happening. What happens, something will happen during the day. It's a seemingly ordinary thing. And you don't even realize it. Then you drive to the track, you know. Well, I'll give you an example. I went in to eat, get a quick bite before going to the track. And here was this guy who had just hired a new waitress, and he was really brutalizing her. And she was mopping the floor, and he's screaming at her, wash the dishes, and... She came by me with her mop, and she says, help me, help me. And I laughed. I said, oh, yeah? And then I finished my meal, and then as I left, he was still screaming at her. And then I just forgot, you know, well, I got to make the first race. So maybe two or three nights later, you know, I'd forgotten all about it, seemingly. Then it came to me in the poem formed about the waitress and the guy and my seeming indifference at the time to the whole situation. And it turned out to be a good poem called Lunch Hour or something, I don't know. So you don't think about it till, or I don't, after the track, I have a drink and I sit down, it comes out. It's recorded, but you don't go around thinking, oh, let me sniff something out here, you know. Something that'll go good on a piece of paper. So it's subconscious.
Well, do you sit down to write a poem in a different way than when you sit down to write a story or work on a novel?
The only difference is mood. I can only write prose when I'm feeling good. And I can write poetry when I'm feeling bad or good. And painting's the same way. You can paint when you're feeling good. I can paint when I'm feeling good or bad. I can write poetry when I'm feeling good or bad. I can only write prose when I'm feeling good. For me, that's the way it works.
You never think about why that would be?
Or no, I never analyze myself. I'm one of those who's afraid to analyze. I'm afraid it might go away if I find out what it is. If I find out the seed, maybe the plant won't grow. Or maybe the goodies will go away, you know, everything will dry up. I mean, it's working without me knowing about it. Why tinker with a winning horse, you know? Put on blinkers, change the shoes, let him run. He's doing it.
Well, can you write when you're drinking? I mean, it takes so much concentration and mental energy.
It takes concentration and mental energy when you're not drinking. When you're drinking, it's a free ride. It's all for free. You wake up in the morning and you check it out. And you say, hey, it's all right.
Well, do you have to throw out a lot of stuff? Or does it really come out?
No, not very much. Say I write 12 poems in a night. I usually write 7 or 8 when I sit down. So I'll usually throw away one. But, no, one out of 14 I'll throw away. The others I'll keep. Not meaning they're good, but they're keepable. So my editor has thousands of poems. I mail them all to him. And like he just wrote me the other day, he said, well, getting ready for your new book, I picked out 200 of your best poems of the last 3 years. That means out of, you know, 600. So I'm going to work them down to 100, and then we'll have the book. So it's kind of a melting down process. He's got a lot to work with.
You write with a lot of speed, then. I mean, do you ever have to labor over a poem or really
never,
struggle with it?
Never. There's no pausing, it just comes. Linda's down here, she hears the machine going.
Machine gun.
There's only the pause at the very beginning, you know, I'm pouring the first drink, I turn on the radio, I light a cigarette. It usually is that first poem, the warm-up. That's the one I usually throw away, the first one. It's a little bit pretensive, and it's I'm playing the poet. I'm at my machine. I'm conscious of it, you see. That's a problem with most poets. They sit down and say, I'm a poet. I'm going to write a poem. I would think that's one of their problems. So that's one of mine with the first one. So I usually crumple that, and the second one goes. Around the 7 or 8 poems I do a night, I guess around the 5th or 6th I hit the peak. And then it kind of goes downhill. And I have caught myself at the end, you know, really drinking, getting into this second bottle of wine, drinking that. I really think I'm pouring it home, you know. I'm writing great immortal stuff. I'm really thrilled that when I see that poem in the morning, it's an utter idiotic gibberish thing of a madman. But it really feels good when you're going on that last poem. You say, God damn, I'm really hitting.
But you try to write every day, or you don't want to?
No, I don't. Every day is kind of a job. I've had too many 8-hour jobs. I just go up maybe every second or third night and I don't think of it, but there's no plan. I go up there and start drinking, turn the radio on, and I just go. There's no set schedule. Now, I would never try to write every night. I'd be trying to gain on something, you know. It has to feel good.
Do you ever experiment, or do you ever want to change your voice and not write this character, your own character? I mean, you know, write from a woman's point of view.
No, no, not that. But I sometimes try to keep myself out of a poem and just work with lines of thoughts and processes. And I've gotten off a few that way that work. And that's a good exercise for me, because I'm so linked with what's occurring to me, and sometimes I can even get tiresome to myself. So now and then, about every seventh poem, I throw in one that has nothing to do. I'm not in it. It's just about things and lines and rhythms and just playing around. That feels good.
You talk, you ruminate a lot in your novels about writers. You know, in Women, there's one section that says that the problem is that they all think they're great. But don't you have to have a certain amount of insolence? Or, you know, don't you have to think that Hank B. Pulaski is great because that's why they're going to want to read what I write?
Well, no. I never felt I was great. I just felt the others were so bad, there was no use of me quitting. I mean, I might as well join the handball court and whack a few against the wall. Like I used to read the New Yorker every week, you know. Yeah. Read the short stories. I said, this stuff is pitiful. And, well, I guess a lot of guys read my stuff. They say the same thing. This stuff is pitiful. I guess you're right. You got to have that. And who can tell which of us is doing it and who can't do it? When does the final vote come in? But I get a lot of stuff in the mail from people who think they're great. They like my stuff. They also think they're great, and they send me their poems and their stories. And frankly, through my eyes, it's really bad. I tell them I'm not an editor. Send it to an editor, you know, baby. And then they write back and they say, which editor? So if you tell them, they say, Charles Bukowski suggested I mail this to you, you see. That's happened, you know, the guy's written. Did you tell this guy to send the stuff? I said, no, I suggested he might. I didn't suggest it was good that he send it to you. I just said, try, just to get rid of him, you know. Try Mademoiselle, hell, tell him anything.
But yet you were saying that you do find yourself giving more interviews because you can't say no, and your fame is somewhat snowballing.
No, I turned down an interview with a local LA station. He gave me a long list of poets he was interviewing, and I didn't want to be in that list, so I told him no. And about a month later, I saw in the papers that I was going to be on the station. Of course, I wasn't on. They did a hatchet job on me. Had a couple professors saying how badly I wrote and all that. So I thought, if you ask me to appear, I better appear, you know. You might cook my tamale. And no, that's not it. It's just, you know, from New York. If you had said you're from Hawaii or China, would be better yet. New York, Chinese, Kansas, anything but L.A., you know, it's too close. I mean, you'll pack up, you'll be gone, right? You got to go back to New York. Some people interview you, they live around, you're going to see them, you know, three times a week. They're going to bring their little sheaf of poetry, their girlfriend, and their six-pack. Distance is great.
The track is your only hobby. You into any other sports? Baseball?
A track is not a hobby, my friend. The track is a Hemingway's bull ring. It's Manolet fighting a bull, facing death. It's rhythm, it's precision. I have a poem here about the track. If you have time, I'll read it. Maybe you'll understand. You want me to get into it now?
Yeah.
Okay.